Hello and welcome to Conversations with the Voice of Reason. I'm your host, Benjamin Boyce, and today's conversant is Julie Beeling, who is a mother, an author, and now a movie producer of specifically In Sheep's Clothing, which is her investigation and historical account of one, Soviet communism, and two, the communist takeover of American institutions. In this conversation, that is exactly what we talk about, and we get into Julie's biography and her concerns, and she makes a prescient and timely wake-up call for all Americans to get off their duff and do something about it. Links to Julie's work are down there in the description. If you enjoy this content, consider supporting it via the tip jars below. Without further ado, here is Julie Beeling. This might be an inappropriate question, but have we met before?
No.
In person?
No. Nope. I don't think so. A lot of people, I get that question a lot. I look just like someone that someone knows or something. I don't know.
Are you AI?
Not that I know of.
Well, that's what an AI would say.
Okay. That would be very interesting to discover such a thing, but I don't think so.
Oh, behold. How's your day going?
Good. Yeah, it's good. Just getting settled here.
Yeah. Wait, getting settled.
Well, getting my son, I have a 9-year-old son who I homeschool, getting him settled out there and doing
oh,
stuff
really?
So he doesn't disturb anything.
My boys are doing that too.
Yeah.
What do you have him settled with?
Legos right now.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be doing handwriting and books right now, but as long as they don't like act like retards, I'm totally fine. I just don't want really loud sounds. Into the recording. That's my one ask.
Yes, it's very important. So yeah, so Leslie, your wife, she interviewed me about 9 months ago or so.
Okay.
So
what was the content of that?
About my book and my documentary.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then Carrie Bartholomew is the one who introduced me to Leslie.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yes. Okay. So apparently you have a problem with communism, but what has communism ever done to you?
Actually, that's a good question. So I lived in Russia in the late 90s, and I was a missionary in Russia for a year and a half. And it wasn't what communism did to me, it is what it did to the people of Russia. And I was there, you know, pretty soon after the collapse of the Soviet Union. There was still Lenin statues everywhere. And Lenin, they'd taken Stalin down by that point, but Lenin artwork, you know, the Soviet artwork was everywhere. And the roots of communism were pretty apparent there. I met a lot of very traumatized elderly people and people who'd been in the gulag, you know, and I didn't even know what the gulag was. But that, like, I did not, that's where I first learned of the gulag, was when I was a missionary in Russia and met people who had, you know, been there for a decade or more. And yeah, it was what communism did to the people of Russia. So after, I actually was in my early 20s. So I had actually finished college already and I knew nothing about communism or Soviet history. I came back from my mission and went to graduate school.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you at least have absorbed through American pop culture that commie's bad? Okay. So
yeah.
That was about your level.
Yeah. It was very basic. But, you know, even though, like, my brother actually took Russian, he studied Russian language when he was in high school. My brother, who's like 9 years older than me. So in the 80s in high school, he was taking and studying Russian. So I'd been around the language somewhat. And then I took 2 years of Russian language in my undergraduate in college. And so, I mean, I was more familiar with the Russian culture, I guess, than the average American.
Like cookies and, you know, like little funny chintzy kitsch kind of stuff.
Yeah. Nothing serious. But it was really when I was in graduate school after my mission, and it was one semester in particular where I took Soviet history and Soviet dissident literature in the same semester. That was absolutely devastating for me. And my major professor for the dissident Soviet dissident literature was herself a former Soviet dissident who had escaped the Soviet Union in the 70s in a kind of dramatic manner. She was very anti-communist. She told us nonstop stories of, her upbringing in the Soviet Union and how her hatred of communism. And of course, I had already seen the results, some of the results of communism, seeing Russia. So, and then I went back and did a study abroad, actually, also in grad school, with her. She was led our group up, but yeah, that semester studying the Soviet dissident literature and Soviet history, I cried pretty much every day for that semester. And
Wow.
it just shattered because I couldn't believe these things that happened in my lifetime. Like even like looking at like 1970s Russia, Soviet Union, and what was happening to the people, but looking further back to the bloodbath. It's like, how could I have never learned about any of this in school? How could I have not known how many people were killed, how many people were tortured and brutalized, and like really studying the literature, and the books and the works that our professor chose for us were really graphic, like of what really happened, and in an artistic form, bringing that into an emotional level. So yeah, it was devastating for me to see that this is what had traumatized the people of Russia so much, the people that I had really come to appreciate and love when I was a missionary there. So, and then I became interested in learning, studying about dissident Christians in the Soviet Union and wrote my master's thesis on that topic.
So, pardon me for the phrasing and for asking this, but couldn't one just say that, how does it necessarily follow that the ideas around communism, which are that there is a collective intention by the community to take care of itself and to organize itself in order that everyone is treated equally and has an equalish lifestyle, how does that necessarily follow into a bloodbath? Could it just be the case, and pardon again for my language, that there's a genetic strain in Russians where they just murder each other, right? Like, why does it follow that communism is to blame for any of that? Could it
Yeah,
be like tribal warfare or something else?
what you described isn't communism. Communism is violent. It's a violent implementation. It's an implementation of that system through force. People don't have a choice to opt out. So if people came together and chose of their own free will to take care of each other, that's not communism. That sounds, actually, I would kind of like to live in a society where people of their own free will chose to help each other out. But with communism, if you don't go with the system, or if someone thinks you might not go with the system, you're going to end up in the meat grinder, you and your family members.
So the system is more important than the individual in this
Absolutely.
communist framework.
Absolutely. There's no worth of the individual. The individual is completely devalued. And I definitely saw relics of that in some shocking ways. When I was there in Russia, like I just remember being on a city bus and a woman didn't have the correct fare. She was too poor, I guess. And she was literally thrown off the bus, physically thrown onto the street and injured, and no one cared. Like it was one thing for her to be escorted off. No one seemed concerned. I've really seen this now in my study of not just the Soviet Union, but even looking at communist China. The people, in order to survive these communist systems, they have to shut off their care for their fellow man because they see so much brutality and so much stamping on people's individual rights. And so you just devalue the individual.
So, how do you perceive that this process of demoralization or de-individualization, again, how is that tied to communism? Like, what's the, I mean, in the title of your book and your movie, like, there's a hint that there's this process where there's this wolf that dresses itself up as something else, but it is, in fact, the opposite of what it's presenting itself to be. Instead of the helpful, I guess, Do sheep do anything productive? I don't know, like maybe the wise sheep, but there's actually like a predator involved
Well,
in
I mean,
that, so.
the sheep grow wool and they
Okay.
produce milk. That's what they, and then they can be used for meat. That's what sheep do that's productive. Otherwise, no. And they're really not very smart.
They
Like, if
mow
you've ever,
lawn, kind of.
maybe, but if you've ever looked into a sheep's eyes, there's not much there. It's
Okay.
pretty vacant. So they're definitely vulnerable. And communism, one of the things that I've really thought a lot about, communism reminds me of narcissism quite a lot, and that you look for some vulnerable prey that you can get your narcissistic supply from. It's really all a power grab. Communism is only done in the name of things that sound nice to the masses. It never has produced that nice utopia for the masses. It produces, the maximal centralization of power for those who are at the top, and a control grid, and a way to punish those who don't go along. And it ends in genocide pretty much everywhere it's implemented. Deadliest form of government in the world's history. But they always find the things that sound nice. And so in Russia, it was bread, land, and peace to the peasants.
Peace.
Yes.
Peace from what? If you could just give us like some history, like
I
just.
mean, they just used those words. I don't think that there was anything
Okay.
specific, but they got lots of wars. The bread, I mean, there was massive famine and starvation in different parts of the Soviet Union, and at least food shortages were common. Land, the government took their land by force. So it was the exact opposite of what they were promised. And what we're promised here in America with our Marxist slash communist system they're trying to force through is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it sounds nice to people who don't know what that really is, but it means the opposite of what people think are thinking, unless they've looked into it. And
Interesting.
I say this in my book and my documentary, the fruits of communism are impoverishment, enslavement, and death. That's just objectively true.
Hasn't it done anything good? Didn't it get a dog into orbit? I
Yeah,
mean, can it can do
sure.
things like along the lines of a flex, right? It can produce
Some things,
something.
yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
the Soviet Union took a populace that was largely illiterate and made them highly literate. So it did do that. It also brainwashed them and indoctrinated them into, militant atheism and Marxist-Leninism, punished them if they didn't want to go with that system. But yeah, it taught them to read. But could the Netherov system have also taught the Russian populace to read? I'm pretty sure it could have.
You know, I've heard, I don't know who said this. It was a few years ago that I heard this, that what happened was that Americans sent their missionaries to Russia and Russia sent their missionaries to America. And I don't know if this is a accurate or not, but Russia's becoming more Christian and America's becoming more communist. It's just on a delayed time frame. Do you see that as well? And are you in contact with Russia right now?
I mean, I have my friends, some of my friends from my mission years that I had met that I follow on social media. A lot of them have moved to the US, but yeah, I have some acquaintances that are still there. I'm not like deeply in contact with anyone right now. It's more just casual here and there, occasional. But I mean, I will say this, the standard of living for Russians has gone up tremendously in the last 2 decades. So when I was there, it was a much lower standard of living. It was like $30 a month income on average for the average person. It was a lot of poverty, and there still is a lot of poverty in Russia, but there's a much bigger middle class and people are able to travel. And yeah, there's, Putin is definitely an authoritarian, so that's not good. But I forgot the question you asked me, and I'm just kind of ask me the question one more time so I can be sure to answer
Well,
it correctly.
it was just a comment that I heard that Russia's trending towards being more Christian and
Okay,
America's
yeah.
trending to being more communist because of the way
Yeah.
that our missionaries planted seeds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Putin did get rid of the quote unquote foreign missionaries. That was like 10 or 15 years ago. It was a little bit of a process, and they've kind of reinstituted the Russian Orthodox Church very to kind of center it in the Russian culture very strongly. And the Russian Orthodox Church, the symbol of Imperial Russia back before the Soviet Union, it was a two-headed eagle. One head was the Tsar, the other head was the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, and they were each wearing a crown and sharing in their power. So it's, in some ways, it's kind of a return to that. But I will say that overall, and this is one of the things I studied quite like more in depth than other topics in grad school, was kind of the religious ethos of the Russian people. And it is very strong. There is a very strong spiritual and mystical ethos amongst the people of Russia, for sure. So it's definitely been revived. I mean, it was reviving quite strongly when I was there in the late 90s. So, yeah, a big interest amongst the people to explore spirituality, for sure.
I just wonder, being, I assume, religious slash spiritual yourself, having dedicated so much time to doing missionary work, what you think of as the correlate of that religiosity in Russia or in America, or the lack of religiosity in America, or the rediscovering or the revamping of religiosity in the form of DEI, like if that's just an outcropping of secularism, or if it's just like something that was already always dormant that is being preyed upon by this kind of, and actually, I would need you to define how DEI is communist. Just for the sake of the discussion.
I mean, yeah, those are some very deep questions you just asked that could be like a whole, like someone could write a whole book on that topic. I mean, I don't really want to go. So I was an LDS, I was a Mormon missionary in Russia, and I'm not currently active in the Mormon church, but I am sympathetic and kind of somewhat still aligned with the LDS church. I'm definitely still Christian. And if some people are like, oh, Mormons aren't Christian, I believe that Jesus is the savior of the world. So that's my definition of Christian. I'm more of an independent Christian. And
It sounds very American of you.
yeah. Yeah. So religiosity in America. I mean, it's definitely been under attack. And I do go into this in my book, Beneath Sheep's Clothing, like just within the media, within the culture, it appears to be a deliberate effort to denigrate Christians and Christianity over the last few decades. And I think it worked really well. I think there's a lot of younger people now, younger meaning like, in the 40s and younger, that hate Christians. There's a substantial group of Americans that hate Christians now. That I don't think feel like that was the case when I was a child. And yeah, it has kind of flip-flopped because Russia now, I don't think, I mean, I haven't been to Russia since 2002, but Christian hating is not really the most popular thing there from what I can gather. I don't think they still don't like the quote unquote foreign churches, and they never had, during any era. Baptists, any like American or foreign church, they really like the Russian Orthodox Church as a whole, the people as a whole. As far as DEI, I mean, communism does act like a religion. And sometimes I use Marxism and communism interchangeably, and I know I guess that's a faux pas to do that, but I mean, I'll give you my definition of Marxism. Marxism is the playbook of oppressed versus oppressor, of locating a group of people who are oppressed or who can be made to feel oppressed, stoking their grievance towards that and their anger, pointing out who their oppressor is, and getting them to tear down that system of power and their oppressors in order to, they think that they're creating more freedom and more equity
Liberty.
for the society, but actually it creates a power vacuum for the communists to come in power. And communism being the takeover of the means of production through force. And violence is condoned. Communism doesn't have any limits to what you can do in order to bring it about. Everything is free game. You can murder, you can lie, you can do whatever because you're doing it in the name of the oppressed. Therefore, it's good. DEI, how is that communism? Equity is explicitly communist because it's calling for equal outcomes and equal shares to be allocated to members of the society.
And I would just add, not just financial, but also moral goods. Like you have moral authority in this situation as well as financial remuneration.
Yes, absolutely. And then diversity, when we think of diversity, which I like diversity, like the definition that I have for it was that there's all kinds of different people with interesting lives and interesting viewpoints, and everyone is to be respected, and we can listen and learn from everyone. I like that. I like diversity in that sense. But the communist definition of diversity is actually, if you don't, you have to see the world through the Marxist lens of oppressed versus oppressor and these power dynamics and quote unquote be woke. And if you don't see the world in that way, you don't have your critical consciousness awakened, you are not diverse, sit down and shut up. We will not include you. We will only include, inclusion is including the people with the woke critical consciousness. Everyone else can sit down and shut up. You will be excluded. That's inclusion and diversity in practice.
Can I just reformulate that? Just because like you're activating my ideas, and I tend to do my interviews. I just like wipe my brain of ideas, so I ask a lot of dumb sounding questions. But like
They're
I
not
just like
dumb.
to try to start over again, try to draw the picture again, even though like.
Right. Obviously, you know a lot of this
This
stuff.
is, yeah, I'm not unfamiliar with this stuff, but so there are these natural hierarchies. Let's just say there's a family hierarchy, and I'm sure that that varies through from family to family, but there's probably patterns of authority where there's a masculine authority, or somebody gravitates towards the masculine authority and somebody gravitates towards the mother authority, and they interlock, and then there's the children under them, and then the children have their own hierarchy. That hierarchy is represented in a business. There will be an executive, and then probably somebody who's more HR, somebody does the business side, somebody does the people side. I'm thinking of a restaurant. And then there's different employees with different subcategories. So, in the Marxist framework, just to recapitulate what you were saying, the Marxist framework sees every hierarchy as oppressive. There's no other interpretation of hierarchy other than power being drawn, resource being extracted, and then used by the person in charge for their own glory, or every relationship. Every power differential is a vacuum, a zero-sum vacuum where somebody's being taken from and somebody is taking from. And in a non-Marxist framework, a structure such as a family or as a business or even let's say a municipal government at least, is all done where the top person is serving the bottom and the bottom are being served by the top. And so all the hierarchical structures are for a purpose other than the people in the structure. The head of the family becomes a part of the
Tyrant.
body. Well, yeah, in the Marxist framework, it's all tyranny. In a non-Marxist framework, maybe a Christian framework, or like just a non-Marxist framework, it would be what the purpose of a family is to be a good family, the purpose of a business is to be a good business. And so that was just my first thought. And then trying to overlay the diversity, equity, and inclusion is it's just a really interesting way. But what I see over and over again is that a power for the hierarchy, the natural hierarchical structure is deconstructed into a negative power dynamic. We need to tear this down. We need to equitize everything. So we destroy the hierarchy, but hierarchy reasserts itself in that negative space as a negative hierarchy because they don't see hierarchy as anything other than negative. The people who the useful idiots come down and tear everything down, and there's no positive values left. So the people who are what maybe we could call evil or opportunistic or whatever negative signifier we want to put there, people who have no moral center, then take over and reestablish the hierarchy in pure tyrannical, as a pure, a rarefied, purified tyranny. Is that accurate? Is that like kind of what you see, or what you're describing in your book? And I'm sorry to take the mic from you for.
No, you described it really well. I mean, I go into the communist takeover of culture, particularly schools and churches, in Beneath Sheep's Clothing. But no, what you described, it was great. And I think that's pretty accurate. The only power structures that the communists are good with are the ones that they control. And I'm also kind of paraphrasing James Lindsay with that, but like whatever they don't control, they'll call it racist or they'll call it, you know, oppressive until they control it. And then once they control it, it's no longer oppressive because they're in control. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, yeah. Churches? Like how does a church go in this direction? And I'm sure you're assuming a Christian church, right? Which has a positive value in it, like kindness, inclusion, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, my book Beneath Sheep's Clothing, it was an outcropping of my master's thesis studying the dissident Christian movements in the Soviet Union and their survival tactics and the tactics of the Soviet state to try to dismantle Christianity. What the Soviets discovered is that they could not dismantle Christianity. They could not do away with it. So they decided to then infiltrate the churches after World War II. And it was resoundingly successful, the most successful tactic that they developed to overtake Christianity. And the infiltration of America's churches began over a century ago by communist infiltration.
Okay. How does that work then? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, show the negative example. How does Christianity, how is it so resilient to direct onslaught or assault?
How is it resilient? I mean, it hasn't been as resilient as one would hope. But
you said that the Marxists or the communists tried to go directly at it and dismantle it and they couldn't destroy it. So they had to.
Okay, in the Soviet Union. Yeah. Well, they tried to do away with faith. I mean, they arrested. So the early years of the Soviet Union, it was mass arrest, mass execution, mass imprisonment of clergy and persecution of believers. Okay. So, but it just bred a lot of underground religious activity is what that did. It didn't completely kill Christianity or any of the other faiths. They don't like any faith, not just Christianity.
Do you think that is because Christianity has persecution, like a persecution modifier, multiplier to it? If the more it gets persecuted, the stronger the faith becomes, like there's some sort of programming.
I do. I mean, there were of course Jews and Muslims and, you know, other faiths also that were engaging in underground activity. The fact that the Bible explicitly says, I mean, I actually, several Soviet dissident Christians in their writings and in interviews say that the way that they tolerated, the way they managed to survive in the Soviet Union was that Jesus himself said, you know, if they persecute me, they're going to persecute you. So the persecution was a given. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they couldn't go directly. So then they developed tactics to allow it to breathe and then, I guess, rot it from the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a system. They came up with a system after World War II of having churches register with the government. And the churches that registered with the government got a lot of perks. They stopped being oppressed. They stopped being arrested, you know, sent to the gulag. There were just a few caveats there. So the churches had, they actually sent KGB agents into the seminaries to pose as clergy. And so it was those KGB agents that rose up in the ranks quickly in the Russian Orthodox Church, in the Registered Baptist Church, in all the registered churches in particular, to the point where when the Soviet Union collapsed in the early 90s, the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church was a KGB agent who had infiltrated in the decades before.
Wow.
They were the ones that rose up the quickest. And then the churches that were unregistered, that were the dissident Christians and the whatever other dissident churches, they still got the same treatment that the Christians had gotten in previous decades, mass arrest, you know, raids on their meetings, gulag, torture, sent to psychiatric prisons. So there was a lot of pressure for people to participate in the registered churches. The registered churches, all of the sermons had to be approved from the pulpit. The churches became apologists for the Soviet system and denied that there was persecution, religious persecution, affirmed that there was religious freedom, quote unquote, as they called it. And They were able to water down the doctrines. They were able to get the churches to go with the government. The Soviet government passed a law saying you can't bring your kids to church. They have to be 18. The registered churches all went along with
Oh,
that. No kids at
okay.
church. Illegal to teach your kids to pray. Dissident Christians would bring their kids to their churches and to their church services and teach them to pray. They would have their kids taken from them by force in some instances and put in
Jeez.
atheistic boarding schools.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Out in Soviet America, you get put into genderistic boarding schools.
Yeah, that tactic really freaks me out for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I
It's very
bet. I
reminiscent.
bet. So, you dropped a little juicy tidbit there, saying that the American Christian churches were infiltrated over a
Yeah.
century ago. What's the evidence or that you found on that?
So, yeah, so well, there's ample evidence. So it was actually, the same people that were taking over lots of different swaths of society, the monopolistic capitalist people of the day of the early 20th century, Rockefeller, Carnegie. Rockefeller helped fund the communist infiltration of America's churches. They set up what they called the National Council of Churches, and it was supposedly an ecumenical organization for the churches to all work together. But the seminary, so they got into the seminaries again. With there were avowed communists. There's several examples. There's Harry F. Ward, the Red Dean. I mean, he was a known communist. Some of these people, their resumes are astounding. They were also a lot of eugenicists that infiltrated. They got into the seminaries and they were teaching the up and coming clergy. And they did a lot of demythologization. Is that the right? Did I pronounce that right? They demythologized the Bible to make it so it's more of a parable. In the seminaries, that's one thing if someone does that, but you would think that Christian clergy would actually believe in Jesus being the literal savior of the world. But they actually even demythologized Jesus himself in some cases to up and coming clergy, these people teaching in the seminaries, communists. And so by mid 20th century, roughly half of America's mainline Christian churches were infiltrated from the top down with communists. Doctrines getting changed, they turned it into more of a social gospel, turning the gospel of Jesus Christ instead of into a personal journey where we get to know God and there's a personal redemption. Instead of that, turning it to social justice, a fight for social justice.
Okay, so in this telling, and not to demythologize your history here, but I'm just recapitulating. It's centering the locus of worship on the community rather than to God in a transcendent and very deeply personal way. Your attention is focused on, I guess, works and loaves and fishes and the social gospel. Wouldn't it be the case that in a holistic Christian faith that both of those things work in
Absolutely.
concert?
Absolutely. And that's why it works so well, because serving the underprivileged is 100% a major part of Christianity.
It's that, so one interpretation that I've heard of the cross is that it's the unification of, that up and down, the individual and God relationship, and then the lateral relationship of mankind. And what you see then is that the up and down part of the cross is being equitized and flattened so that there's really no God. But what ends up becoming the God when you take the God out of God?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, self can be God for some people, but for and I don't even like I have nothing against any Christian denomination, and so like I'm not here to like point fingers at all. I think all of the churches, all of the major denominations are deeply compromised, and they're all full of wonderful people. That both are true at the same time, and both and all they're full of people who have legitimate faith and wolves in sheep's clothing. It's just a mixed bag in all of the denominations. What becomes God if a call? I mean, communists seek to set up heaven on earth because they don't believe in the hereafter, or they don't want to worry about the hereafter. They want their heaven on earth right now. And who is the God of a Soviet, of a communist system? I mean,
So it's a closed, it's government. Already a closed system. So it's going to be a government.
Yeah. Yeah.
And or like social justice, which is a government.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do know that this infiltration into these churches did push the members of the churches left, further left, more of the government, you know, has more of duties to take care of the people. Mm-hmm. And then you can feel good about it because we were helping the underprivileged. Again, it's very tricky. Say this, communism marries a truth to a lie. And there's truth. There is some truth intermixed with all of the communist stuff. It's just that the ways that they go to implement these things, it doesn't work. And it ends in a lot of misery, even more misery in most cases.
Oh, a couple of years ago, effective altruism is a buzzword that came up in Silicon Valley, I believe. Like the masters of the universe thought that they could program or algorithmatize charity or compassion. Mm-hmm. And what you end up doing with a lot of these charities, these nonprofit organizations, is that instead of going out and working at the soup kitchen, you write a check that goes over to Uganda or something like that and helps somebody over on the other side of the world. And then when you see something bad, rather than washing dishes, you start beating pots and pans. And so it's very performative, and it abstracts the act of charity rather than, in the examples of the gospel that I recall of Jesus, like you can feel him really being present with every given person. He's always right there with that person or with that situation.
Right.
And then the social gospel is you're abstracted from it. Like, we're a people, we're going to help these people over here. There's layers of, clothing between you and the people that you're trying to help, you know?
That might be true. I mean, some of these people are encouraged, you know, to get really down in the dirt with the people themselves. Okay. And you see some of them in early 20th century, they were working in the slums. So some of them were the social gospel people really were on the ground with the people. Again, there can be some good things that came from that too, but, I certainly support helping the underprivileged, but I don't support within a Christian church, the removal of the focus on the individual's own relationship with God and working out their salvation.
Okay.
So.
And so, how did it progress then? Or where is it at now from your point of view?
Well, so mid 20th century, about half of America's mainline Christian denominations were subverted from the top down with communists. Then there were different waves. Apparently they tried to take over the evangelical faiths in like the 70s and the communists did, and it didn't succeed. Here in America, they tried to, and the evangelicals were like, no, they went even more independent and even more hardcore. They've been a thorn in the side, but then in the last decade or so, the evangelical churches have been infiltrated from the top down with communism too. So I actually wrote most of my book in 2008 to 2010 before that happened. And I took
things have kind of changed.
Yeah. I wrote most of the book then, and then I couldn't finish it. It's like, I had a mental block. I set it aside, and then I pulled it out in the summer of 2021. And then I was like, okay, I got to finish this. And I finished it in the beginning of 2022, and I had to catch everything up to modern day, at which time I definitely freaked out because things had gotten so much worse with all the woke stuff. I didn't quite understand what that was until I went to finish my book. I was busy. I had a child. I had other businesses and stuff that I was focused on. But catching up with the woke takeover of culture in America and in the schools and the churches is very disturbing. But yeah, to see, I came across the documentary Enemies Within the Church, and details the communist takeover or the infiltration into evangelical churches with woke, like critical race theory and stuff like that, where you have like people from the pulpit, like, you know, having everyone repeat after me to apologize for being systemically racist and whatever else, and apologize for their whiteness. And like ask God to forgive them for their sin of racism that they didn't know they were but they've been secretly racist. They just didn't know it. And making that be the focus instead, again, the individual relationship with God. There's Black liberation theology is a big one that I touch on briefly, like in my book. But it basically, I mean, liberation theology is how Latin America was overtaken to the degree that it was with communism, using Catholic priests, radicalizing a certain number of Catholic priests to go and then radicalize the peasantry to cause them to tear
Agitate.
down. Black liberation theology is almost the same thing, but it's retooling Christianity to be an explicit fight for racial justice, and making, the black certain black churches focus on that very heavily instead of anything else.
What do they mean by justice?
Well, I think they mean having the equal outcomes. I think they mean having their cut of the pie. And again, that's a whole other topic, which obviously, the civil rights movement was 100% necessary. Yes, it was also partially infiltrated by communists. It's a whole other can of worms. But I mean, for my research, liberation theology itself was an invention of the KGB. I was looking into the origins of Black liberation theology, and it was some really interesting things. It was actually this white couple at the seminary that encouraged Reverend Cohn, who was the one who, quote unquote, started Black liberation theology. They're the ones who put him up to it. That's what he admitted in his own writings. And I kind of looked into this couple, and they look really suspicious to me, but I don't really know. Were they KGB operatives? I don't know. But they were involved in some weird things. So you have that. And then you have the diversity, equity, inclusion, sustainable development, global citizen thing infiltrating the churches, the UN sustainable development goals, which is just a one world religion. This is something I don't discuss in my book, but the people I've interviewed for my documentary, Alex Newman, James Lindsay, Michael O'Fallon, about and Lisa Logan discussing the one world religion. I've learned what I've learned about it from them, that there is a goal for these global entities to frame the ideological underpinnings of every person in the world, and they want to use the churches for that, and they already are using the churches for that. And to the extent that churches will cooperate and allow their doctrines to be shifted towards diversity, equity, inclusion, global citizen, they'll be on safer ground. The churches that won't cooperate with that are probably going to get run into some problems, like they might be shut down eventually.
Oh, in America.
Yeah.
How do you shut down
This
a
is
church in America?
well, so this is not, again, this is not my particular area of expertise, but from interviews of the people for my film, how do you shut down churches in America? Well, we can take a little look back at, and I do go into this in my book, a couple of very unpopular fringe groups in America, fringe Christian groups that have had, militarized raids, children taken forcibly without due process. In some cases, some people were killed by government. You have the Branch Davidians, 1993. Obviously, there's a lot of other things going on there, but there was actually playbook developed in the mid 1984, developed by a group called the Cult Awareness Network. And I've tried to research this group, and there's more there that I haven't been able to find, but they came up with a playbook to take out and destroy minority Christian groups, churches. And their playbook looks strikingly like the Soviet playbook for what they did against their dissident Christian groups that didn't comply. It was turn the media, get people in the media to go in and accuse them of child abuse and drum up, oh, they're child abusers, child abusers, child abusers. And in some cases, maybe there's a thread of truth there. Maybe there is some child abuse going on there, but you inflate it to the point where, oh, we have to go in with tanks and snipers because the kids are being beaten so badly, when that really was not the case. And you turn the populace against them, you get the local authorities. Yes, we have to go and, oh yeah, we're going to spend millions of dollars for this small little fringe group that some people say that they might be mistreating the kids, and we're going to use the full force of everything in order to address that. And you get to take the kids forcibly, and like in the case of both the Branch Davidians and FLDS, you also have like really extremely punitive prison sentences, like decades for things that like worse than rapists, worse than child traffickers, for marrying an underage girl type thing. So I don't support these particular fringe groups. Just FYI, I'm not a fan of the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Mormons, or the Branch Davidians in terms of their doctrines. It's not really my thing. But due process was ignored in those cases, and this playbook from the Cult Awareness Network was implemented. So those two sects have been kind of examples. I know, we've have things going on now with like more conservative Catholic priests being put under surveillance, and the FBI putting people on watch lists. I don't
So,
know. I don't know.
okay, we don't know, but and I don't know either. So have a heavy grain of salt or chunky grain of salt here. Drumming up fear over Christian nationalism allows for people to be a little bit more okay with Christians being watched
Yeah,
and by the
absolutely.
government because they might be nationalists.
Right.
And we're a
Well,
nation that
right.
doesn't excuse nationalism.
Well, and this is where, again, this is not my particular area of research deeply into the primary. I'm going to,
Okay.
from what I'm piecing together from the individuals I've interviewed for Beneath Sheep's Clothing, the problem is the woke infiltration and communist infiltration of the churches, the woke infiltration. The reaction is the overreaction that's hoped for is Christian nationalists to overreact. And then the solution will be to dismantle free Christianity.
Okay.
That's a possibility. This is a distinct possibility.
So we've been speaking about the churches, but you said that the other area that you get into is the schools.
Yes.
This is well-trodden territory for
Yes, it is.
my audience, but
Yes.
blackpill us, frighten us a little bit here. What's going on
I mean,
into the with the brains of our children?
we're in the end stages of a Marxist cultural revolution here in
An
America.
end stage. So this is like late. This is
Very
late in the
late.
game.
Very late in the game. Like
Okay.
they are close to winning. If America just goes on as it has, and people don't have a mass awakening, and we just keep sending our kids to the schools, we just keep trusting the schools that they know what they're doing with our kids. When I was sent to public school, I actually had a pretty good education in the public schools, but my parents just trusted me to the teachers, and thankfully I didn't have any weird radical teachers. But it's not even just weird radical teachers we have to be worried about. The people creating the curricula, the social and emotional learning curricula that is designed to It is designed to remove Judeo-Christian ethics as the foundational ideology of our children and switcheroo it with woke Marxism as the new foundational ideology. The fruits of Judeo-Christian ethics are mixed. However, it has brought us greater freedom and prosperity in the Western nations than what we've seen any other time in the world. Marxism, on the other hand, is not an ideology that brings great fruits. So the fact that our children are being retooled with a new ideology in the schools without our permission should be extremely alarming. We must do what we can to interrupt that in any way we can, whether that's pulling our kids out of the schools, which is what I chose to do, or whether that is very, very, very consciously teaching our children and helping them step around the landmines.
Okay.
Some people might have to go that route for whatever reason, but we are in the end stages. And if we just go with the flow, we will lose our children. We will lose our society. We will lose our freedom.
If 2020, if the way that young people en masse, not all of them, but en masse behaved in 2020 is any indication of what they're being taught, we could see that they are riotous, vindictive, and they demand a lot, but they don't know how anything runs. So they're making wildish demands of people that are impossible. And then we also see that in those heavy blue areas like Denver, San Francisco, LA, after the, they're heavily authoritarian, and they also, they just, it doesn't work. It's gross. It's dangerous. And now they're, I don't know about the migrant thing, but now they're just like writing checks to migrants or illegal aliens or whatever you want to call them, to come over here and just take it out. So it doesn't look like, I think that's a taste of it. That was a big taste. It was a very big snapshot, you know, which is how I got woken up to this whole stuff, which is seeing it at Evergreen. 2020 was like, okay, here it is. And what you're saying is that without any further either divestment or deliberate intentional education and inoculation, perhaps, the entire society is going to be like that. The entire generation is going to be like that.
That's what the goal is for these. Yeah, that's what the goal is. And, you know, there's, again, there's positive developments happening. There's a lot of people waking up, but we need much more of that quickly.
Okay.
You know, the whole Yuri Bezmenov thing, like, you know, sorry, I can't pronounce his name wrong. It's supposed to be, people say Bezmenov, it's Bezmenov. So I have to be a geek and say it the right way in Russian. But, you know, the KGB agent who defected from the Soviet Union and came over and warned us and gave us the steps, the four steps of ideological subversion. Just a little refresher, because your audience is probably familiar with this, but the first step takes the longest. That's demoralization. 1 to 2 generations of schools, you know, kids, and they can do that if they can get in the schools.
So overlaying that is like, first you start them off with Howard Zinn's, People's History of the United States. Like maybe the narrative that you're being taught isn't, maybe you shouldn't be as patriotic as you are. And then the next generation, you're saying, actually, America is a hateful, oppressive country that is founded on the blood of slaves.
Yeah. That's a pretty good description. Yeah. So, and you know, again, Yuri said in 1984 that they were already well over fulfilled with that demoralization. Step two is the destabilization. It's 3 to 5 years, he said, it takes to destabilize a nation. I think most people who have been looking into this would agree that 2020 would probably be considered the start of that destabilization period. What year is it now? 2024. We're year four. Mm-hmm. It takes 3 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, getting at all of its major infrastructure, its, you know, economy, its international relations, medical system, food supply, you know, all of those different things, destabilize. Step three takes 6 weeks, according to Yuri Bezmenov. That's the crisis. And that is actually the overthrow, where the communists come in and just seize control. In some cases, and in some ways, I wonder if that's not already done. We already had the coup. I'm not sure. It looks pretty interesting to me. But then step four is normalization, where that's where you're killing the dissidents. You're executing the people that are standing in the way of maintaining the power, and you get people used to their new state of slavery. So we're in that perhaps end stage of destabilization right now, but there's enough people here in America that if we were to have a mass awakening, much more than what we have now, we could nullify some of these agendas, maybe not all of them, but some of them, I think we certainly could nullify.
Hmm. And what would that take?
I don't feel like I have much control over who gets elected, and if they get elected, are they even going to be able to do much? Where we have the control, I don't have control over what comes, you know, what shows Netflix puts on. Of course, I can control, you know, my son's access to that more, because he's still young. We have control over where we send our children to school. We have more control over that. We have more control over where we go to worship. Are we worshiping in a church that's very heavily subverted, that's, you know, taking things even further than it needs to go with this cultural revolution? Are we sending our children to these schools where they're being retooled again with a new ideology, a new ideological framework that is not what is ours? Most people in my generation and older, a Judeo-Christian ethics is pretty solid for most of us. The younger generation that's being,
what does that look like? Are you just saying like basic 10 commandments?
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff? Whether a person is religious or not, the basic 10 commandments type framework.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how is the Marxist framework any different than don't kill honor your mother and father, don't steal. I guess the stealing part and the honoring of mother and father and the okay, I guess I see it.
Again, anything is justified in communism if it's in the name of helping the oppressed. That's all. You have to just do it in the name of the oppressed, and you're good. So we're in this end stage. So we have to have this mass awakening. And I do in the film Beneath Sheep's Clothing, we do. I mean, it's going to freak some people out. People who have not already been delving into these topics. I mean, your audience mostly is people who are much more aware and educated than average. And I still think even people will learn. I mean, I learned so much just interviewing people for the film. My goodness, some of the best people. But for newbies or normies that are, maybe just now looking into these things, there's a lot of disturbing content there. And a lot of things that, I mean, but that's okay. I want people's paradigm to be shattered. If their paradigm is leading us towards tyranny, we need a mass awakening now. And God, I wish everyone could pull their kids out of schools. It's not easy. Myself, I'm a single mother, and I work, and I have a young son. So, but. I'm making it work, and there's different things. I'm hoping that people can get together and make micro schools and different co-ops and different things, and communities can come together and help people who may not be able to teach their kids at home because, let's say, both parents have to work out of the home, or there's only one parent who has to work out of the home. I work from home, so I'm lucky in that sense. But we really have to protect our children, and we need to, I mean, I hope that churches can revive themselves, that members of churches can become aware of these agendas, go to their leaders and say, hey, look at this. We're not doing this anymore. We're going to go back to, like, the Bible or whatever the case may be. We're going back to our church's original tenets, and we're not doing all this extra global citizen DEI stuff. And if not, maybe people can just leave and abandon those churches that are heavily subverted.
It's you say that there's disturbing stuff in your film. Like, is that like Khmer Rouge kind of stuff? Stuff over there, stuff back there, or is it the disturbing stuff now, stuff here for you.
I mean, we do we have reenactments that we have actors that portray indoctrination in a Soviet classroom, and then we have those same actors in a modern woke American classroom. So the same woman who is the Soviet teacher, and she's really scary, by the way. And then she's the American woke teacher. She's fitting the children with what I call the woke goggles. And these children are wearing these woke goggles, and they're being trained to see the world in a certain way through a certain particular lens, the lens of oppressed versus oppressor. I mean, I think for anyone who is not familiar with the queer Marxist, gender Marxist agendas,
I
it's
was going to ask
disturbing.
about that if you wanted to go there, because you've avoided that. What why what is so effective about destabilizing a child's sense of self, sex, and with via gender and queerness and sexualities?
Well, it takes out it, so all right, so then we go back to Antonio Gramsci. What were the five cultural pillars, the cultural hegemony that he had to take out of the West, or if they had to be infiltrated, that he talks about? The family, education, media, the churches, and the law. So if you confuse children about gender and you hypersexualize them, you're taking out the family and you're taking out religion, both, because their religion of origin is not
Jesus.
going to be compatible with that. And also the traditional family structure obviously is very heavily compromised with these experiments they're doing.
They've captured our media. That's without question. Nobody can question
Yeah.
that. I'm pretty sure nobody can question that.
Yeah.
Education, totally captured. I'm sure you could probably make a case. There's a lot of people and it's not everywhere, but yeah, it's probably pretty captured.
Yeah.
Families, they can't capture every family, but if you look at the statistics, families aren't doing as well. And in our media and in our education, family is not reified. Religion, religiosity, or at least religious practice has declined a lot. Maybe it's gone in different directions or whatever. But once law is captured, it's over. It's done. From my point of view, like that's the end of America until once law is gone. I mean, family is the most important thing, but they can't yet control family. But if you look at the way that they're getting ready to take children away from parents and stuff under the banner of castrating them for their own good or whatever, affirming them. for their own identity. So families on state, but it's all through law.
Yeah.
It would all be through law. So, you know, I'm sure that the blue people or the liberals are really concerned about the conservative justices because of, you know, their hot button issues. But once we have like a Supreme Court that can't define a woman, or can't define property anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't define a woman, how can you define property anymore? How do you define a family anymore? You're not a psychologist. You can't define family.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, if the law is taken over completely, and of course they need to disarm the populace to have their full takeover. And of course there's efforts in that direction, but that one might be hard. But if you have a whole rising generation that hate guns and think,
It's interesting. It's such a needle to thread because, one criticism of, I guess I'm just going to, bring him up by name. He's a friend of mine, but one criticism of James Lindsay is that from the right, it looks like he's always saying, don't act, let them win. Don't act. Your reaction is the action. Mm-hmm. So it's really frustrating to not do anything. It doesn't seem like that's the path forward. So if there is, insofar as there is like a natural generational pushback, elicited by that rebellious American youth spirit where like, this just isn't cool. This isn't, you know, one wonders like what will be cool in the other direction. And if it's a possibility of averting like, even this is a psyop, like the fascist youth, maybe like the, by conflating that with just conservative youth, it might be like a return to conservatism, a return to sexual mores, a return to individualism might be, pardon the phrase, a sexier alternative to this drugged out, gendered out, protested out, exhausted, pathetic, revolutionary spirit that is really canned at this point. It's really like run its course. So that could be a place to hope.
Yeah, I think so. And again, and my Beneath Sheep's Clothing speaks to that where people have more control, and most of us are not, like, I have no legal background. I don't have any sway on any of that, but most parents with kids and Christians, we have an opportunity to try to save the family. We have an opportunity to try to obviously save our kids from the indoctrination. And I hope there can be some reclaiming of the churches. I hope we don't have to see a collapse of the Christian church. I hope that there can be a revival that is, to be able to get away from this Marxist infiltration. But yeah, all I can do is try to share people, you know, again, what happened in the Soviet Union, what I'm seeing that's happened here. And we're also going to be, I mean, working with people to put together information to give, like, my film only goes in my book also one chapter on solutions, the film 15 minutes on solutions at the end, when in reality the solutions need much more time. So I'm hoping to be able to interview different people after the fact and really point people in the right direction of solutions for reclaiming education eventually, even though that's going to be a big,
Yeah.
you know, that's going to take some time. You
One or
know,
two generations, remoralizing.
yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping that, you know, it's a really fine line that I walk with the book and the documentary to not offend Christians so much that they won't listen, but also giving them truth, and sometimes the truth is offensive. So hopefully people can, you know, watch with an open mind and learn. And if they don't have to take it at face value, they can go in and look at the primary sources and dig in there themselves. But yeah, it's wake up now, or I mean, we are in dire straits. I mean, it's to the point, like, and it has been for a few years. Like right now with my son with homeschool, we're at this particular moment, we're studying. We just finished the American Revolution, and now we're in Constitution and going into the formation of the nation. And it's very emotional for me that I'm living through perhaps the death of my nation while I'm teaching my son about its origins. I hope that's not the case. I hope that we can maintain freedom. I really do. And after, again, studying what people that I cared about and care about, the people of Russia, what they went through with the loss of freedom. And not that they had massive freedom under the czars, but they certainly, it was way worse under communism. It does feel very personal to me. And I came away with very much a huge respect for America. I didn't really feel that as a child. I was just kind of a Joe Schmo, like whatever, America, sure, fireworks on 4th of July. But as an adult, I've really developed a deep love. I love freedom. I want everyone to have freedom, not just people in my country. But if America falls, the world is doesn't have much hope. So
Where can people find your content?
yeah, you can go to beneathsheepsclothing.movie, and we have the intro of the film up right now. We have a new trailer coming out next month.
When's it
But
to
it's
be released?
so May 23rd, it
Okay.
will be the online release date. And we have one more live premiere that we're going to be doing in Miami, Florida on May 18th. But tickets for online and our live premiere are at beneathsheepsclothing.movie. You can there's a link to grab my book from there if anyone wants that. And I'm on X, Instagram. Those links are also at beneathsheepsclothing.movie.
Wonderful. Julie, thanks for the wake up call and thanks for your morning or your afternoon.
Well, it's early afternoon. Yeah.
What do you do when you're not defeating commies?
Well, I'm interested
Just something for you. What do you do just for you?
for
Gardening?
me.
Yeah.
Gardening is not for me. Gardening is for
Okay.
preparedness. Well, I like taking Epsom salt baths with essential oils and
Oh,
detox baths.
do you have like a special CD that you play?
No music.
Just
Just
quiet,
the
just like the drip. Huh.
And yeah, that's
Huh.
pretty
You
much
like to
it.
float. You're a floater.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a great hobby to have.
Yep. Just homeschooling my son,
Yeah.
cooking dinner, and just living a normal life. So,
Well, cool. It sounds like your own personal American dream.
yeah. Yep. Thanks so
Well,
much
I'm
for
gonna.
having me. I've been wanting to. You've been on my radar list for quite a while, so it was very nice to meet you.
Well, I'm honored to meet you too, and I'm glad to promote your work, and all links to which will be down there in the description.
Thanks so much.